Welcome everybody to Your Ancestors Are Calling, Shift Your Perspective on Anxiety and Depression to Heal Generational Wounds. My hope with this summit is that we can start to shake some of the stigma around the labels of anxiety and depression, learn how to manage these mind-body states, and perhaps begin to see them as gifts instead of curses, if you will, or burdens. So today with me, I have Tarya Ward, and she is a PhD who's worked intensively with her own dreams and other people's dreams for more than 40 years. And for nearly 20 years, she's been an avid student of Indigenous ways of knowing and being. In 2004, she established Bridging Worlds, which is a center for working with individuals and groups to bridge the waking mind with the dreaming mind, the domesticated self with the indigenous self, culture with nature, the visible with the invisible, and the conscious with the unconscious. Presently, she has a private practice specializing in dream analysis in Asheville, North Carolina, where she works with her clients in person, as well as on Zoom or Skype, and maybe by the phone, on the phone. She offers dream groups, workshops, and lectures. Tarya has a PhD in depth psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute. Previously, she was a minister of an interfaith organization for 20 years, and she was a professor at the undergraduate and graduate levels. And she was also the owner of Bridging Worlds Retreat Center in the remote mountains of Western North Carolina, where she conducted retreats and vision quests. So Tarya, thank you so much for being with me today. I'm so excited to have you.
I'm so excited for what you're doing. I feel like this is a really important subject and I'm really happy to be able to talk with you about it. So,
thank you. I appreciate it. Can you talk about a time in your life when you have dealt with anxiety and or depression? And how you were able to shift your perspective on one of these or both of these?
Yes. I, about, as they say, right on schedule in midlife, had a series of crises that occurred for me. One of them was resigning from the ministry. And I had been so committed to that path. And it was, to me, a marriage vow. It wasn't something I ever intended to step away from. But somehow it began my whole sense of it, of religion itself, of myself within it, began to dismantle. And I barely even knew why or what was going on. But ultimately, I ended up feeling that I had to step away and resign from the ministry in order to follow my own, where my own path was taking me. And that led to a severe depression. It was a complete dismantling of everything I thought I knew about myself, about what I considered God and my calling and how I saw the universe. I lost all my friends. I put my kids through trauma as we stepped away from the only life they'd known their whole life. So it was a dramatic shift, and I no longer had a profession to go to because I worked there. So my ex-husband at the time still had his business. So, you know, when we made that shift, he was still going to work every day. I was just confronted with a massive depression. And a lot of anxiety, of course, comes with that sense of loss of identity and loss of a belief system and friends and all that. Shortly after that, my youngest daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And I had thought that the ministry resignation was going to be the worst thing that could happen. But this was 1,000 times worse than that. Just the health of my daughter being at risk. And the uncertainty about all of that. And then not too long after that, my ex-husband decided not to be a husband anymore. He wanted to do other things. So I had a bing, bang, boom, blows that were just so massive, I hardly knew how to put one foot in front of another. And had to learn how to live with the the extremely, extraordinarily, overwhelmingly crushing blows that were taking up my days with so much that I felt like I needed to rise to the occasion of, because I still had two young daughters to raise. And I was starting to get a PhD, so I was in my doctoral work when most of this came down. So I learned, actually, that this dismantling, it didn't take that long, actually maybe a year, that this whole dismantling of my former identity and personality was actually a very creative process. And that if I could get on board with it, and if I could understand that it was removing, I won't say falsehoods or false identities, but identities that I'd outgrown. It's, you know, it's like when a plant is shedding its shell as it comes up through the ground. And it probably feels painful to the plant when it's like breaking out and things are falling away, and the things that, you know, the dark protections that you've been in, all of a sudden you're in the sunlight and somebody could come crush you. I mean, if you think of what a plant goes through, that's what the human psyche goes through when we're breaking free from former sense of identity. And I like what you're doing with this, Dottie, in terms of the generational wounds, because I feel like there is a calling from the ancestors to help us to break free. And I would say also, not just our ancestors who have gone before us, but our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, the ones that are yet to come, that whole generational line, our great-grandchildren are calling us to wake up, because they need to be free to work in new ways in this world that is now so rapidly changing. So I feel like when I began to understand that I was breaking free, not just for myself, but for not only my ancestors and my children's progeny to come, but also for the whole rest of the world, I got a sense that the whole world itself was getting ready for a dark night of the soul, that old systems were breaking down in a very radical, very dramatic way. This was back in the early 90s. This was even before 9/11 that I started to understand that this is all going to break down really soon. And I'd been writing about it when 9/11 happened, and then all the things that have happened in the last decade since then. So I began to understand that what I was experiencing was part of what we're all destined to experience in a certain way, whether personally or culturally, collectively, you know, in families, that somehow we're all required now to dismantle old paradigms of how to think about self and world, and how to be in relationship to the planet that we now are understanding more fully what we're stewards of, and making it a safe place to live for the generations to come. So there's a lengthy description, I guess. Depression and anxiety. I don't know if you have any more questions about that, or you want me to elaborate in one way or the other, but.
I want to honor you for your vulnerability. That's an amazing story and a very, very personal one. So thank you for being so transparent and sharing that with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. It just, it was not just theoretical. It was down to the bone personal, the whole event. So, yes.
And when you started to transcend, or maybe not transcend is I don't think that's the right word, because I don't think we really transcend these states, because they're daily. You know, I think anxiety and depression are something that we slip in and out of a lot. When you started to come out of it, let's say, what tools did you use to lift a little bit of the depression and the anxiety to get through your daily life, to get your PhD done? How did you get there?
Well, I have had, as you read in my bio, an interest in dreams since I was 24 years old. So even 20 years before I discovered Carl Jung, I had been studying and researching dreams and wrote down my dreams every day. And so that to me was the major tool. It was the dream life that was helping me get a vast perspective on what I was going through. But also, dreams can be just so so practical and personal. They just kind of show you step left this way and then step right over here. And they're giving you very practical information to help you move through your days. So not only sort of a galactic global perspective they offer, which is, often comes through dreams, but also the most just nuts and bolts practical information and guidance can come through your dreams. So more than ever, I was relying on my connection to my dreams and the work that I was doing with my dreams, and also working with other people's dreams, because other people's dreams, as we know through the indigenous people, when you're listening to the villages, the dreams of those in the village, they all have a message for you. So just tuning into that dream time way of knowing and thinking was massively supportive for me. And then I also had a dream that led me to begin to study the tarot, which is a, you know, it's kind of a sweet story all of its own. But I feel like the oracular information, that dimension of consciousness, also comes from a very similar dimension that the dreams come from. So both of those working together, I think, helped me get a sense of strength, a sense of purpose, a sense of vision, a sense of my own capability to do this. Actually also get a sense of, I don't know, somehow how to feel honored that I was called to go through all this, that it felt like, okay, this is big, this is hard. And it's actually like, it was like three times a PhD program, because it was so massive that I really needed to work hard to do it. And I felt good about it. So lots of days, some days, not so much, but yeah, lots of days.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what would you say your greatest strength, or the greatest strength you've gathered from working with your dreams, has been?
Well, Carl Jung wrote a beautiful essay called Two Kinds of Thinking. One of them is directed thinking, and that is rational thought, the thought that we have in order to solve a problem or meet a goal, or you know, that is purposeful, it's one foot in front of another, very linear kind of thinking, which is very useful and very helpful for what it's helpful for. But he was describing the other mode of thinking, which it was more mythic and dreamtime thinking, the sort of mysterious, mythical, fantasy kind of thinking. And I feel like the work with the dreams and also the oracle, even though both of those could help me with the directed kind of thinking that I needed to do, that the kind of thinking I was being inducted into through the dreams and the oracle was more of this fantasy thinking, getting my placement within a myth, within the larger myth. And as Jung said, which I also experienced, there is a lot of psychic energy that goes with that. Once you get a sense of meaning, a sense of your own sort of soul direction, rather than just your personal, how am I going to pay the bills direction, but something in the much larger scope of your human destiny, and you start to feel like that is feeding your ideation every day, that there's something new that you're learning and discovering there. There's a lot of energy and strength that goes with that. Your vision expands. As Jung says, the directed thinking is draining. You get exhausted by it. At the end of a day of, you know, that kind of thinking and that kind of work, you're pooped. Whereas the other kind of thinking is very energizing. It gives you energy. It gives you life. So I would say, by focusing a little bit differently on these two kinds of thinking, allowing myself the freedom to think within these other ways or modes of being, which I find indigenous people that's where their thinking is. It's much more mythic than directed. And that's where they can open their senses, their whole sensory capacity to understand something that's coming from the future, or something that's coming from thousands of miles away, or something that's coming from the cosmos. All of that is because they've let go of that sort of addiction to directed thinking. And so that is, it gives you a lot of strength and a lot of energy. So, yeah.
Okay. And was that time in your life what led you to the use of Oracle, or had you been using Oracle? I think you mentioned earlier the dreams kind of led you to the tarot.
Yes, it was something, it was really a startling story. I had a dream, and in the dream, I was given a beautiful gold coin, big, thick gold coin, about the size of the palm of my hand, this big gold thing. I was given that by someone in the dream named Angelus Arian, and I'd never heard of a person by that name. But I knew that there was immense value in what I was being given in the dream. And I, you know, woke up from it and I wrote it down, and I had that kind of psychic energy I'm describing from it. It's like, what was that? Somebody gave me something really valuable in the night. And not too long later, within maybe a week or two, I brought this to show you. I found this book on a bookshelf looking at me just like this, and it's by Angelus Arian. And I had no idea it was an actual person. And so, and the name of it, of course, is the Tarot Handbook.
Wow.
And so, of course, I had to buy it. Wow. And I'd had no former exposure at all to the use of the Oracle. I'd never known anything about it. I didn't have any prejudice against it, nor any curiosity about it. It was just something that was completely outside of my experience. But picking up this book, I find that she was a Jungian. She was an anthropologist. I was getting my PhD, so she was kind of speaking the language that I felt like I could trust and understand and go with her sense of things. She's just an amazing thinker. She died just a few years ago. But then I began using the Oracle every day, using the cards that she, as she taught it. And then I moved to a different kind of Oracle deck. But every day I would pull three cards in the morning at least. And by the end of the day, I mean, they'd tell me something as the day started, but by the end of the day, I was got such a big perspective on what that was telling me about how to understand the events and the flow of the day. And it was like, I felt like I understood that there were guiding presences. I felt like it was putting me in touch with guides, angels, however you want to think about or understand those invisible intelligences that kind of know how your day is going to go and what you're going to need to know how to get through it. So I found that so rewarding and exciting and sometimes life-changing. It was just like something I might have just gotten furious or upset or mad about. It's like, oh, they told me this was going to happen. Now I just have to, you know, deal with it this way. And I felt, I can't tell you the amount of tender care and love I felt through that. It was like angelic presences, just like caring. Like they see what's going on and they were willing. You know, you might think of it as a web of intelligence, you know, like the matrix of the universe that's intelligent. For me, I have a sense of angels and beings, but I think it's however you experience or want to think about that which sees us, knows, cares, loves, and can guide. I felt like it put me in touch with all of that. And that has been a remarkable support in my life, and I use it with clients, and it's a remarkable support in their lives too. So I have a lot of love for that possibility, and I feel like it was suppressed for reasons by the church, who just didn't want people to have their own connection to the gods. They just wanted to be the only one to tell them what to do and to get their tithes. And I feel like it was a diabolical thing that it was taken away from us, and I feel like it's time to reclaim that.
I agree.
Yeah.
When you would pull three a day, did you set an intention or ask a specific question behind each three, or just three cards for your day? How did you manage that, or?
It was generally just three cards for the day. But if there was something like pressing on my mind and I wanted, you know, information about this decision or this dilemma or relationship or whatever, I might have a more focused question. But generally it was just part of what I did. I meditated in the morning and would pull the cards and kind of go into that sort of dimension of relating to the invisible and the unconscious realm so that I could get a sense of my day that was beyond just what I had to do in the directed thinking world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you use Oracle and Tarot interchangeably, or do you think there's a difference between a deck of Oracle cards and Tarot cards, or how would you describe the difference?
That's a really good question. I feel like the Oracle is a dimension of consciousness that comes to us through thousands, uncountable ways. You know, sometimes, I don't know if you've had this experience, but you'd be looking at a tree and all of a sudden a face pops out because of just the way the light or the wind is hitting it. And I feel that there's some kind of message that comes through in that way. Or you might just overhear something, as, you know, people have it all the time with a song that just arrives, or open up a magazine and there's something, you know, there's this thing comes right out at you that is a guidance for what you were just thinking about, and that kind of thing. I think the Oracle is speaking to us all the time through the principle of synchronicity, as well as in very directed, intelligent ways. And I just feel like it comes all the way, all the time, if we're open and allowing for that information. You know, a license plate on a card in front of you, car in front of you. I mean, those kind of things happen. And that to me is part of the whole oracular world that is ready to guide us. We always have to have our own sort of sense of what it's saying, you know, not take it as, it's a mirror for our own inner knowing. It's not something from the outside that's making decisions for us. We have to take it very much to heart, whatever is being spoken, and weigh it in our own heart. But I feel like and cards can be really helpful with that. And some of the systems, especially the Western Tarot and the I Ching, you know, these have been designed for thousands of years by people. So maybe not thousands in the Western Tarot, hundreds. But the I Ching, I think, is that old. And so, you know, there's some systems that are really powerful that way, but otherwise it's just a dimension of address that's going on all the time if we pay attention and allow for it.
Okay, excellent. So how would you advise anyone who's interested in working with their dreams to begin that process? And how would they begin listening to their dreams and paying attention to what they're saying to them?
There's very practical things that one can do to start to begin to get a relationship to your dreaming mind. And the main thing I would say to start with is take a little pad of paper and put it by your bed with a little pen on top. And when you're going to sleep, look at that, focus, tell your mind that you want to remember your dreams and that you intend to be able to take notes on them. So it's like, it's making an intention, and that can be like building a muscle. You could do that for a long time and not, you know, have it start working, but you just stay with it. You stay with it and then it starts to happen. And any little thing you get, whether it's just, of a snippet of a dream or a whole narrative, it's, you know, it has value and it has importance, and it's also strengthening your connection to the dreaming mind by just writing it down. And so I usually, what I do at night often is just reach over in the dark, don't even hardly open my eyes, and make a little note so that I can pull it back in the morning. So I don't recommend that people wake themselves up, because sleep is too vital and too precious. But if you get up and go to the restroom, or, you know, if you have a moment where you can just scribble something so you can pull it back in the morning, and then in the morning take some notes on it, you know, if that's all you can do, just, you know, expand a little bit. But when you can, as soon as you can, write the narrative of the dream down in a dream journal. Keep a nice dream journal where just your dreams are being recorded, because I think that helps get the connection with what the narrative is. And you'll see a development of the dream themes or recurrence of the dream themes, or, you know, something that was troubling last week is sort of broken open this week, and you can kind of get what's going on and how that is. And to understand that the dreams are always speaking in a symbolic language. So I don't know, if you dream of maybe your first boyfriend, it may or may not have anything to do with that person, but it might have to do with the your own developmental experiences related to relationships, or your concepts of love, or how that goes. So you look at kind of what it means to you internally and personally, and then see if it actually relates to the person that's connected in the dream. But most of those characters, events in the dream are symbolic. So you just read it in a very symbolic way. And dream dictionaries can be a little bit helpful, but I would just be cautious not to just take it as too literally. You know, like if you dream of an ocean, you know, there are symbols that's the unconscious, that's the great mother, that, you know, there's ways that you can start to think about that. But it's basically your own relationship to what is that oceanic sort of presence in your dream for you at this day. You know, it might be different tomorrow even. So you kind of look at the location of it in your own life, as well as in the larger life of the collective mind. So I would say just start with the dreams, and if you can, talk to friends about them. You know, talk to people who are respectful of what it might be, because often it's your own unconscious that's speaking to you. So somebody else that can hold up a mirror can be really helpful in that. And I would say talk to your children about them. I'm asking my grandson now, he's 3 and a half, and he has really interesting stories coming out of his dreams. He's got a school he goes to at night as well as one in the day. He tells me about what he sees at night, which is different from what he sees in the day. And it's very interesting. And if you respect that, you know, in a child, it's helping them to understand the reality of the psyche. Yeah, I think just energize, you know, give energy to that dimension of life. It's, you know, all the scriptures from age immemorial are related to what happened in the dreams. You know, the king got a dream, or the prophet got a dream, or Joseph got a dream, name him Jesus, or take him to Egypt, or, you know, all this stuff happens in dreams. And so somehow how we've decided that was a bunch of hocus pocus, or just some kind of mental garbage that's being flushed out, we really lost track of a big part of the gift of what that is for us and has always been. So I think just get it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned symbols. Is there a way, are there common symbols that show up in a lot of people's dreams, or how can we know, I guess, on an individual basis, what a symbol might mean?
Well, yes, there are common symbols. Like often they say a house is a symbol of the self. And so the living room would be the part of yourself that sort of meets, you know, is public. That's where people come in off the street, where you open the door to the street. It's that sort of public persona, that part of the self. Whereas the basement in the house might be more related to what's stored there, what's in the unconscious, what's, you know, not always seen but always present. Or, you know, so if you're going exploring in the basement or the attic is more the higher unconscious, or, you know, things have been stored in a different way. So, the bedroom would be the most private parts of yourself, the parts that you don't show to the normal world, that are, you know, more just for you or for your most dear loved ones. So those kind of symbols can be very standard. You know, you start there. I would say a lot of the dream ideas or symbols You start with what the sort of standard definition is and then take it to the more personal level, what it's actually meaning to you. But yes, I mean, I think, a well-written, well-designed dream journal dream dictionary can be helpful for beginning to explore the idea of what these things can mean. And there are some that are, pretty basic, will show up in people's dreams and kind of consistently have that same meaning across the board with people to some extent. So.
Okay. Do you have a dream dictionary that you recommend to people? One that you find is reliable?
Or maybe that's a good question. I have them sitting on my shelf. One is called the Herder's Dictionary of Symbols. I didn't bring them with me to the table here. Herder's, H-E-R-D-E-R-S. There's another one and I'm not coming up with it, but do you know there's really good stuff online? There are really, I'm more and more just going straight to some of the online dream dictionaries. And if something you read doesn't resonate with you at all, just like go right past it. Don't let it, interfere with your own connection to the symbol. But some of them can be really helpful. There are, you can just allow yourself to be drawn to the ones that feel like they have the intelligence that you're looking for or the possibility that you're looking for. So there are a lot of dream dictionaries online that you can go to. Just Google it. Google your symbol.
Okay. Can you tell us your thoughts about how to work with anxiety and depression as ways to heal generational wounds?
Yes. I think always the sense of if there's a depression that's happening or the anxiety that's happening, you can ask yourself, what's right about this instead of what's wrong about this? I mean, we kind of know what's wrong. But what happens when we say what's right about this? And maybe what's right about it is I'm depressed because I'm in a situation in my world that isn't supportive of my development anymore. And so the depression is calling me to a deeper sort of level of connection to my deep self. And to some of the messages. I mean, Marie-Louise von Franz, who was a colleague of Jung's, I remember reading her saying, when you have a depression, go there, sit in the deep, dark place of it for as long as it takes and get it, get what it's saying. And then you start to get some energy. The energy that we spend resisting it instead of just listening to it can be more debilitating than anything, the resistance. So, of course, all of these, bits of advice have their limits, of course. Just the idea that you just honor it, you just listen to it and say, what's right about this situation? And that, anxiety, Edward Edinger, another Jungian, I remember reading his statement that anxiety is, as he said it, merely something big that's trying to get into something small. So, a simple notion of that is when you're just about to go on stage to do something, to perform or give your song or your gift or your lecture or whatever it is, and you feel that anxiety, it's because all of this bigness is trying to come into the smallness of our little, our little self, our own, little words and brain. And so the anxiety is actually to honor that there's something immense that's trying to happen. And we are trying to make ourselves just a comfortable vessel for that hugeness that wants to come through. So in that sense, to just sort of breathe through it and know that there's something beautiful about what's trying to come in. And we're feeling our limitations rather than the possibility of our ability, our capability to allow for that to come through. So, it can be just a reframing of the very uncomfortable experiences of depression and anxiety, but to recognize that they're very human experiences. You know, and one of my professors said, if you're not depressed, you don't know what's going on. So, I mean, there's that too, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll see that people who don't ever experience depression or kind of live in a certain way that they're not dealing with certain aspects of life itself, which is great. If it's working for them, it's awesome. You know, I don't have any kind of judgment around that, but you know, it can be really hard to tune into the things that, that need our attention that are more repressed and suppressed in the world. And that can be a calling that calls for, you know, that calls us into a depression. And then do the things that you know to do. I mean, sometimes just calling a friend or just getting out to go to Trader Joe's and pick up some food, you know, anything to just kind of move the energy, can, you know, help. I would say the thing that the temptation sometimes is just to not move. And sometimes, you know, movement is going to be the most supportive, the most helpful thing to get the energy flow happening. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. My next question would be for somebody in a pretty acute stage of depression, which I've been in many times in my life, to say, just sit with it. That would, you know, for somebody that like recoils to that thought, what would you say to them?
So can I just ask you, if you just sat with your depression, what was that like for you? Was it just like debilitating or helpful?
It depends, you know, on the, I guess the reason behind the depression. So I can think of one particular bout of depression in my life where sitting with it would have been just more debilitating, or at least that's what I thought at that time.
Uh-huh.
In life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, and like you said, getting up and just going for a walk or something like that would really help a lot. So, yeah, I guess at some times I would have taken that and said, okay, I can do that. And other times I would have been like, no way. I can't even fathom thinking about it anymore.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think all of these little bits of advice, if they're helpful, you know, like pay attention to them. If they're not helpful, don't. I mean, it's our own sort of inner guiding system that's so necessary. So sometimes, you know, just ask yourself, if I just sit and deepen into this, is that going to help me? And if the answer is no, then, you know, then move. Call somebody. Sometimes I think the hardest thing to do when you're like that is to call somebody, because you don't want to inflict your own dark mind on somebody you love or care about. You know, it's like, why would I? But generally, that is the medicine. I find people are big medicine. And the caring aspect of our friends or family members can be so extraordinarily healing and helpful if we allow ourselves to reach out like that. So, but you know, any of these kind of ideas for how to work with the depression, you know, can change from day to day. Sometimes it, you know, will be helpful to do it one way and sometimes another, but to consistently sort of explore the ideas. You know, there can be a lot around, I'm sure you've explored this, diet, exercise, all those things that really affect how depressed we can be. So just doing some really practical things about what foods or habits we have that might be contributing to more density in our experience. And then just, of course, always remembering that tomorrow is another day. Sometimes that's so hard to remember. And, you know, just to wait with it. And I don't know, for me, reading poetry, reading Rainer Maria Rilke when I was really depressed, he knows what depression is. He could talk about it, you know, getting somebody that can actually talk about it was really helpful, you know, so find somebody who's, you know, not trying to dismiss your experience, but actually elaborate, you know, so.
That's very helpful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add or feel you need to say or want to leave us with?
Well, I would say, let me think. That's a good question. I think that going forward in the current world that we live in, there are going to be challenges that that there are going to be some disruptions in our own paradigms of how to be and live and structure everything. So I think whatever we experience that where we have gained some kind of tools for how to work with the frights, the anxieties and the depressions, that those of us who have lived in this path and in this journey can be actually the next helpers for those who maybe are encountering it for the first time. I feel like as a whole community of this human species, we're heading in a way into the dark night of the soul, which is, you know, it's a powerful, beautiful, purposeful thing, but it's uncomfortable. So I would say take the tools that you're developing personally and imagine that those tools that you're developing will be very useful in terms of our being with one another through the challenges ahead. And I think they're coming. And I think there's really great hope that we're going to get, you know, the dark night of the soul is to open the soul world into a bright new understanding. So, you know, to know that that understanding is on the other side of this experience, but how to get through the experience and support one another in it, I think is the main thing. So it's not just for ourselves that we endure these things, even though it feels very isolating and personal. On the other hand, it's, you know, it's a lot that we have to offer and to give and to, you know, be with someone who is in that you know, encountering some of these experiences for the first time, you have a lot to offer. So, you know, God bless each one of us who, you know, confronts with any kind of courage and sense of compassion for ourselves and each other in this. You know, I think that that is going to be really fruitful.
Thank you. Beautifully said. Yeah. Especially compassion for ourselves. I think that's hard a lot of days, but it's very, very important.
It begins at home, doesn't it? It's like if we can't have compassion for ourselves, we're not going to have it to give either. Right. So
that's true. Yeah. How can people find you if they'd like to learn more about you and work with you?
I have a website, tariaward.com, TayriaWard.com. You can write to me through my website. I work with people constantly by Zoom, Skype, telephone. If you're in the Asheville, North Carolina area, I have an office where I can meet with you personally. If you get on my mailing list on my website, you'll find out when I'm doing retreats or lectures or any of this sort of thing that I can offer to you. So just get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you and any responses that you have from what we've talked about today. I always love the feedback. Any questions or responses, I'm wide open to hearing from you. So thanks for asking.
Thank you for your time today, Tariya. It's been very enlightening. Learned a lot and really appreciate your wisdom and your compassion.
Thank you. And thank you for what you're doing. I think this is just a really beautiful offering that you're making to others. And I am honored to be a part of it. So.
Well, thank you everybody for tuning in, and we will see you soon. Bye-bye.